What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today we're going to be talking a lot about Brian Keefe. If you don't know, Brian Keefe just had his introductory press conference at the Pendria Hotel in D.C. It was a great event, solid press conference. He said a lot of solid things and intriguing things, as did Wizards GM Will Dawkins. Got a chance to talk to a lot of different people on the Wizards beat within the Wizards organization. So just going to kind of recap my experience covering that on behalf of Bolts Forever, the highs of that, and kind of some main quotes that I'd like to take out and kind of discuss and break down further. And then kind of talk about some draft stuff, because you can't talk about stuff in June without talking about the draft. It's in less than 3 weeks from the time of recording this, at least. And the Wizards have the second pick and also the 26th and 51st pick. So going to talk about that. And then also dive into what Brian Keefe not only means for this organization as a team, but individually for certain guys like Denny Avdija and Jordan Poole, Corey Kispert, and kind of how they played under Wood versus how they got better under Keefe. So those are kind of the talking points for this episode. And without further ado, just going to hop right into some of the things I noticed from the press conference. The first thing, Will Dawkins kind of gave a bit of an introduction to Brian Keefe, an opening statement, if you will, and just kind of reiterated the reasons for hiring Brian Keefe on this team. And the main thing that I kind of took from it was Brian Keefe, the person, was a bigger reason for the hire, I feel like, than Brian Keefe, the coach. And that's not to take anything away from Brian Keefe as a coach, but Will Dawkins just couldn't say enough good things about his new hire and what he means, not only from an X's and O's perspective, but more so from a relationship, a one-on-one perspective. The first thing he said, Will Dawkins said about Keefe was, and this is a quote, "What I remember most is how much time he took to know me as a person. He's genuine. He invests in people. He puts the team and players first and puts himself last," end quote. That to me speaks like, look, he's a people person. He's going to try to invest in these relationships, these one-on-one connections, and really try to get these players to buy in to whatever he's preaching. Because if they don't respect you as a person, they won't respect you as a coach, and then everything kind of gets messed up from there. And I feel like we saw it a lot under Wes towards the end of his tenure, and even in year one, when you had a lot of these veterans kind of not buying into what he was putting down. You had some inner quarrels between players and coaches, and nobody was on that same page, because I feel like that respect factor wasn't necessarily there, especially when you're trying to win now under a first-year head coach. It's a little different. But I feel like under Keefe, it seems like he's got the respect of the players because he puts the time in on the court. I mean, Dawkins mentioned he has that sweat equity that not a lot of coaches have, where he works with the players like one-on-one in practice. He's a player development guy. He's in the gym, in the lab with these guys as much as possible, trying to work on their games. Really, he's going through it with them. And I think Doc is basically saying, look, that means something to the players when you see your head coach, trying as hard as you are, putting in the same amount of work that you are, if not more, to get you where you need to be. That's something that matters, and I feel like he does that, and that's something that the players can, rally around, buy into, and when you have that respect factor, like I think Keefe does, it makes it a lot easier to preach what you're trying to build a culture, because I think the players will rally around that and be on the same page. And look, I think being this player's coach that Dawkins described Keefe as, and a lot of people have described him as, that has its ups and its downs, especially on a young team. Like, you want players to respect you. You want the players to like you and want to play for you. But you also, you don't want to be their friend. You want to make sure you have that, divide where, look, we can have a great relationship. You can talk to me about anything. I'm going to be there for you, and I want you to succeed. But you're also not going to walk all over me. Just because I want to maintain this relationship doesn't mean I won't air you out. Even if you're making $30 million a year, $20 million a year versus a guy making five, you're going to get treated the same. And that's kind of what you got to keep in mind. And that's kind of what Keefe has to balance here. You can't create a system where you're just the nice coach that can get walked all over. There's got to be that respect factor, that divide between coach and friend. And I think he's in a good spot with that, because not all coaches, a lot of coaches can have the players respect their X's and O's and their coaching philosophy and their smarts, but not a lot of players can get that respect. A lot of coaches can get the players' respect factor on a personal one-on-one level. And I think Keefe has the ability to do that. He's already done it with a lot of them. As you saw, I mean, six of the players, Vucevic, Baldwin Jr., Jared Butler, Justin Champagne, Eugene Omorui, Jules Bernard, like, they took time out of their summer. They didn't have to be in D.C. They didn't have to pull up to this event. But, I mean, they took the time to come out here, sat in the front row, and were there for their coach that has been in the thick of it in the practice gyms and on the court with them. So that shows something too. That means something for those six players to be there to support their new head coach. But that's kind of what I wanted to emphasize about that. Like, you want to be a player's coach, and that's fine, but you can't be a player's friend. You know what I mean? Like, there's got to be that middle ground. And I think Keith has the ability to find that. I hope he does, because I feel like there's nothing worse than when you got a guy walking all over you as the head coach and you have no real say. I feel like that was what happened with Darvin Ham in LA. Like, he's trying to preach certain things, but you got LeBron and AD that think they're better than Darvin Ham, and they don't respect him as a person or a coach, I guess. But, like, they kind of walked all over him. And then you saw at the end, he got blamed for everything when it really wasn't his fault. You saw that with Doug Collins in, what was it, 2002, 2003, whatever the first year Jordan came back. I'm actually reading a book about it now, but Doug Collins came in here as Michael Jordan hired him, because Michael Jordan knew that he could walk all over Doug Collins, and Doug Collins would just be a lame duck coach that kind of got bossed around because he was so focused and fixated on being the friend of the player instead of being the coach of the player. And that's kind of what I want Brian Keefe to avoid. You know, it's great to be a player's coach and all, but you got to have that middle ground. So that's that. He also mentioned that he wants to play fast, but he also understands that starts with defense. And that's a perfect quote. And here's why. The Wizards were one of the fastest playing teams, maybe the fastest pace last year. But you can't get out and run in transition if you don't get stops and if you don't force turnovers. Forcing turnovers is the easiest way to get on the fast break. But if you're a team like the Wizards were last year that plays 0 ounces of defense, it's going to be pretty difficult to grab the rebound and go off a miss when they're making every shot, or to force a turnover when you don't have many defensive stoppers. They're going to have to buy in on the defensive end first. And for Brian Keefe to know that, I mean, everyone knows that. It's one thing to mention it, it's another thing to do it. But I'm just glad that that's being emphasized. And it's different from Woj saying it versus him, because we actually saw some defensive improvements in terms of effort level, defensive rating under Keefe versus what we saw under Wes. But it's the same thing where you can talk the talk now, but it's really going to come down to, will there be a effort level switch on defense, an actual emphasis on changing that side of the ball? And that's something you'll only see, you know, 10, 20 games into the next season. But at least he's saying it. And what I want to there's two more quotes that I want to talk about. This is from Will Dawkins. He said Brian Keefe has a unique ability to see people for what they can be, not what they currently are. This is perfect, because it and like Dawkins said, it aligns with what the Wizards are trying to do with this rebuild. You need a coach that can spot potential, can see what players could be good at if they're struggling. What roles these players would be better off fitting in versus what they are now. And I mean, I take a guy like Johnny Davis, for example. Like, Brian Keefe could sit there and say, all right, well, looking at you now, you're a bust, and you've done nothing in the 2 years since being the 10th overall pick, and you're not necessarily playable right now. But I see that you could be if you buy in on the defensive end and then develop any ounce of a jump shot and maybe morph into a 3-and-D. Not like your Herb Jones 3-and-Ds that are great 3-point shooters, but a decent 3-and-D player. And if Brian Keefe can spot stuff like that, that's very valuable in a rebuild. Because these players now are going to be, if they're here for the long haul, are going to be a lot better and a lot different than they are right now. And you just got to have that patience and that buy-in level to spot that and to put players in the right spots to succeed. And hopefully Brian Keefe can do that. And look, it I want to end it with this. I don't want to harp too much on the quotes because it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to do it, and I get that. But there is one that and I put this in the headline of my article for Bolts Forever, if you haven't checked that out. But this is the quote that stuck out for me from Ryan Keefe. He said, "This is a rare opportunity in sports when you get to work with people that are aligned, from ownership to the front office to coaching, and we're invested in finding the right way to do things." Now, there's two things from that quote. The first thing is that alignment. I feel like under Tommy Shepard, Wes Unseld Jr., and Ted Leonsis, look, Ted Leonsis wanted one thing, and that was to win now, even when the roster wasn't good enough. And then you have Tommy Shepard, who made some win now moves, but weren't all in type moves, wouldn't trade very deep into his draft capital to acquire someone. I mean, you talked about guys like Dejounte Murray that were available that the Wizards didn't pull the trigger on. There's certain big time moves that they didn't make. And instead, they made small moves like getting Russell Westbrook, even when that wouldn't work. That's Tommy Shepard, maybe not knowing if that's the best move, but trying to appease his owner because they weren't in alignment. And then you hire a first year head coach to coach your all in team. That's not alignment. Wes Unseld Jr. needed time to grow as a coach, and you threw him into the fire with a team that you thought was ready to win now, and they weren't because of your pressure from the owner. And that's what happens when there's not that alignment. The owner wants one thing. The GM thinks maybe that's not possible, but I guess I'll do what I can. And then the first year head coach is lost because he doesn't understand how to manage all of these people that might not have that respect for him now. And that's what happens. And you miss the play in those years, and you waste Bradley Beal's prime, and you trade him for way less than you could. And that's what happens when you don't have that alignment. But it seems like now Ted Leonsis, the owner, he said, "You have my blessing. I'm hiring Michael Winger. I'm hiring Will Dawkins. And you guys go ahead and do everything. I'm going to stay with you wherever you go. I trust you. And I'm going to be patient throughout this because we're rebuilding and it's going to take 3 to 5 years." And that's what you want from your owner. And then it trickles down to the front office. And they've been making a lot of small moves. I mean, big moves in the beginning, trading Brad and KP, but extending Kuzma and Denny Avdia. Making smaller moves to get like Jared Butler and Justin Champagne, guys that they think might be able to be pieces here, acquiring additional draft capital by trading Daniel Gafford. Like they're slowly working at it, and they don't feel that pressure from the front office. And now you hire a player development coach like Keefe that you hope could see you through this rebuild, but no is definitely going to emphasize player development, defense, and shooting, exactly what these guys have been looking for. And to have that camaraderie and that togetherness from the top down, that's what Keith's saying here. And that's kind of, it's nice to hear that as a Wizards fan because there's been such a disconnect between not only those three, but the fan base as well. I mean, fans have been clamoring for this team to blow up and rebuild for the last 4 to 5 years. And the ownership just tuned them out, even though they probably knew it wasn't going to work. The front office definitely did because they were just pawns in the owner's game. And the head coach was lost and probably shouldn't have been the hire in the first place. And now you have competent people in those big time roles, and hopefully Keith is kind of the last piece to that puzzle, where they're working together and just building this slowly, methodically, but most importantly, building it the right way. And that's what I got out of the Keith press conference, is that togetherness, and that quote really stuck out to me. So those are just come with some of my notes and biggest takeaways in terms of what Keefe and Dawkins said from Brian Keefe's introductory press conference. Like I mentioned, it was big that the players were there, but he's just got to find a way to make sure he's a player's coach, and not a player's friend. You know what I mean? And kind of that's what I'm looking for out of him. A couple of other notes that I want to talk about, and these aren't just like specific to the presser. These are more broad, wide-ranging, long-term notes about Keefe and this front office. The first thing is, and I saw this a lot on my article, and maybe I used a couple words, and I was a little too optimistic, and I'm gonna be like that sometimes, and that's gonna happen. But I think we're in that honeymoon stage of this front office, and with Keefe as well, where there's not much expectations. You're early on in your rebuild. You're kind of, if you're a Wizards fan, you're sitting here like, okay, well, we're not supposed to be good, but like, okay, I like that move. And okay, they did that right. And when you're comparing these guys to Tommy Shepard, who did a lot of wrong, it's easy to see it from a optimistic perspective and to be very happy with it. even though it might not be any type of big time move. I mean, even the Gafford trade, like Tommy Sheppard would have held on to Gafford and tried to make a push at the second half after the All-Star break to make the play-in. But they traded him to capitalize on his value. And while that might not be a great trade in the grand scheme of things, Wizards fans were happy about it because it's what rebuilding teams are supposed to do. You're not waiting for Daniel Gafford to have a bad year and then trade him. You're trading him at his peak value for a pick and a player. The most you're going to get for Daniel Gafford, and they capitalize on that. But you also can't get blinded by this honeymoon stage, and they're only a year in, and they're doing a great job. I don't know if there's a move I apart from not trading Tyus Jones that I haven't liked from Winger and Dawkins, and Keith did a solid job in the time frame that he was interim coach. But I worry as Wizards fans that you could get too sucked into. Just because they're rebuilding and they're making some of these moves now, you're kind of blinded in this honeymoon stage, and you think they can't do anything wrong. I think about Scott McLaughlin, if you're a Commanders fan or Redskins fan at the time, he took over as GM, and I mean, he killed it. We were like, oh, his picks are great. He ended up taking like Sua Cravens in the second round. He missed on every second round pick in this in his time in DC. Even first round picks that he took weren't great. He took Josh Doctson at like 18. And you kind of get blinded because the old regime under Bruce Allen wasn't good. And then you move on to McLaughlin, and you're like, okay, well, he can't do any wrong. And then he ends up doing a lot of wrong. So you just got to keep an open mind with Winger and Dawkins. They haven't done it. They've done a phenomenal job so far. But you just got to understand that it's early on in the rebuild, and there's still a lot to be done in terms of getting this team back to contention. And they've done a great job so far, but we'll have to see. And here's the next thing I want to talk about is Brian Keefe shouldn't be evaluated in the next year or even the year after, I feel like, in terms of wins and losses strictly. The evaluation process should be a combination of player development and how the young guys are getting better. And that coupled with effort level, are the guys playing to a level that's respectable? Are they competing night in, night out? Do guys seem like they've bought in? Does the culture seem like it's changing? Is there a different vibe around this Wizards team than you've seen in the past when they're just kind of treading water and playing to play and there's no real emphasis on competing? Those are the things I'm looking for. If Brian Keefe won 12 games next season, I wouldn't tell you to fire him. Your team isn't good. Your roster is one of the worst in the league, and that's what happens when you're rebuilding. And for people to sit here after they hire Brian Keefe, for fair weather fans to sit here and say he went 8-31 in 39 games as head coach in the interim role, and you're gonna hire him full time? Are you serious? Watch the games. If you watched a lick of the Wizards versus when you watched under Keefe versus under West, you could see that they improved in so many categories. So many categories. And it's just for those people to sit there and literally just not have watched the final 40 games of the season, then look at some of the records and say, well, he went this and he's terrible. Maybe he went 8-31 because a lot of his players were injured towards the end of the season. Mainly Tyus Jones, Kuz missed a solid portion of the latter part of the season. You traded Daniel Gafford, arguably your best defensive player. You were playing a bunch of, guys that probably would play for the Go-Go, but you wanted to kind of get to see what they could do towards the last part of the season. Like, maybe that's a reason he went 8-31. It's just possible. He has one of the worst talent pools in the league to pull from, and yet he had these guys playing at a higher level than they were under West when they had Daniel Gafford and Tyus Jones was healthy, and they were playing basically their full team. It kind of it just it rubs me the wrong way to see fans bring up the record when this team is built to lose. Like, they're supposed to lose right now. That's what happens in a rebuild. And for people to come out here and say all that stuff about the record, that just kind of pissed me off because it's clear that you didn't actually watch the games. And then another thing, this is the last thing I want to talk about with Keith. I want to touch on how much he helped the team, not only but individuals on this team as well. I'm gonna name off there's three guys that I feel like really ascended under Brian Keefe, and that's Danny Avdia, Jordan Poole, and Corey Kispert. And look, Denny Avdija was great in the beginning of the season, better than he had been, but he took it to a new level. Obviously, Jordan Poole probably played the worst he had since his rookie year in the league when Wes Unseld Jr. was coaching him to begin the season, and he was playing him off ball like a shooting guard, like he was Klay Thompson or something. But then the second half, he pulled away and was terrific. And same goes for Corey Kispert, who saw a massive leap under Brian Keith. So this is the statistics, and this doesn't tell the whole story, but it tells a lot of the story. And I'm gonna name off the first one's gonna be the player stats under Wes Unseld Jr. for the first, 43 games of the season. And then the second number is gonna be the stats under Brian Keith. And you can see the leap that these guys made in these categories. Denny Avdija is the first one. 12.5 points per game under Wes Unseld Jr., up to 17.7 points per game. That's a 5 points per game jump under Brian Keith. Most Denny's averaged by far in his career. 6.2 rebounds per game to 8.6 rebounds per game. So under Keith, more of an emphasis on Denny getting down low and playing as more of a four than, playing as a wing that wouldn't utilize his 6'9" frame. He got down low. He helped on the glass with Daniel Gafford was traded, and that was really big when you have a guy like Marvin Bagley and Rashawn Holmes that aren't, seven four guys or known rebounders. Like they're gonna get boards, but they need help. And Denny Avdija kind of did that towards the latter part under Keith. You look at a guy like Jordan Poole. Like I said, putting up some of the worst numbers in his career, goes from 16.5 to 18.5 points per game under Brian Keith, but the main thing is the 3.5 assists to 5.5 assists. Brian Keith came in, and I pretty much the first thing that he did was take Jordan Poole out of shooting guard, put him on the ball, start him at point guard, and then go from there. And you just saw the amount of double-digit assist games, the double-doubles he was racking up. The turnovers, still an issue from the beginning to the end. But nonetheless, I mean, improving in points, improving in assists per game. And like I said, the eye test passed. If you watch the games, he was making some great reads and finding his teammates. The offense seemed a bit stagnant when Tyus was out and Jordan Poole was still playing the two guard. And then you move into point and you got that movement back. He was breaking down collapsing defenses, kicking it out to open shooters, pushing the pace. Just a lot better, a lot more fluid of a game for Poole under Keith than it was under Wes. And look, I would expect a similar role. I didn't get to ask Keith a question, but if I did, I would have asked if you expect Jordan Poole to start a point guard again next year, expect to see a similar role from him. And I feel like the answer probably would have been yes, just because of how well he played to close out last season under Keith. And then possibly my favorite part was Corey Kispert and how he just took it to a whole new level under Brian Keith. 11 points per game under Wes Unseld Jr. Under Wes Unseld Jr. to 15.5 points per game under Brian Keith, averaged another rebound again, helping out on the glass. He had, I think, his first double-double of his career with rebounds or something like that. He was helping on the glass, getting 6 to 7 rebounds a game under Keith, on like the last 3 to 5 games of the season. Like he really stepped up, and I feel like had a way bigger role, more on ball time for Kispert, more plays run for Kispert. And you just kind of saw him take it to a new level under Keith. So those are three individuals that I'm stoked to see in a full season under Brian Keith. As you can see in the 39-game sample size, I mean, Denny Avdija and Corey Kispert averaged 5 more points per game. Both helped more on the glass. Jordan Poole, more assists per game, more points per game. It's easy to see why he was the hire, and that's kind of why I'm happy that he came out here and we hired Brian Keith because I think he's a great hire for this organization. I think he's going to do everything he can. But the main thing that I'm trying to stress is he shouldn't be evaluated on wins and losses strictly. It should be a lot to do with player development, effort level, and compete level. And that's kind of what I'm getting at here. A couple of other things I talked to. Shout out to Brandon from Locked On Wizards, Brandon Scott. I met him for the first time in person at the presser. One of the nicest guys I've ever met. So down to earth, so easy to talk to. He is an encyclopedia about the Wizards. He knows so much about them. So obviously, I've talked about Locked On. I've been on there before. Him and Ed do great work. So be sure to go over to the Locked On Wizards podcast. Give them a follow or subscribe. They do really good work. Also ran into my guy Bijan Todd, who works for Monumental. He one of the nicest guys as well. Guy, it was nice talking to him. He that morning he was on a news call for the NBA Combine, and that's where the Nikola Topic news broke, where he now has a partially torn ACL. He also talked to Saloon as well about, you know, possibly moving over to the NBA and playing with a guy like Bilal if the Wizards do end up taking him, if they get another lottery pick. So it was nice to see him. Josh Robbins as well, very nice. Talked to my dude Troy Halliburton, who was really nice. You know, taught me a lot about journalism, and I'd really recommend giving Troy a follow on Twitter. Really humble dude and really kind dude as well. So I want to talk about those guys because I don't go to a lot of these press conference type things, but when I do, it's always nice to meet new people. I got to talk to Will Dawkins for like 5 seconds and shook his hand. It was one of the coolest things I've ever done. And look, I know you're if you're a journalist, you're probably not supposed to say stuff like that. You know, you don't want to like fanboy over it, but like, who am I like kidding? Like, obviously, you guys all know I'm a Wizards fan. So obviously, like being a Wizards fan, getting to shake the hand of the general manager, like it's pretty cool. So that was a pretty cool experience. Saw Michael Winger. It just seems like we got like the Wizards have some good people in this front office, good people in this organization, and it's the same thing I kind of compare it to the Commanders. Like for so long, this team was so mediocre, and there were so many issues behind the scenes, and you knew they weren't really gonna win the title. They might make it to the second round, but they didn't have a chance to beat the Cavs or to beat the Celtics, but. It seems like this front office is trying to do things the right way. And so when the Wizards do make it back to the playoffs, like the Thunder were saying, like it's an arrival. It's not a okay, we're kind of here, but what are we going to do? We're not going to win it all. And hopefully this front office, by doing it the right way and taking the time and hiring guys like Brian Keefe and stuff like that, they do it the right way and they figure out the formula and they have a good plan. And hopefully Brian Keefe is the start of it. So the press conference went well. Thought Brian Keefe well spoken. Same with Will Dawkins. And that's kind of the Keefe press conference. And the last thing I want to talk about is the draft, because by the time I'm recording this and I'll post it today, it's June 6th. There's 20 days till the draft. And the Wizards still have yet to release any of their pre-draft workouts. And it's not like no team has done it. A lot of teams have been releasing them. And the Wizards have, under this front office at least, been very tight-knit. I mean, nobody has any information about anyone else apart from Brian Keefe that got interviewed for the head coaching job. And Will Dawkins even said at the press conference, we're not going to disclose those names because we want to be respectful. We don't really want to say we interviewed this person and we decided not to give them the job, which I respect. But nothing's been released. They're keeping a lot of intel in-house. And I would expect the same thing to happen with their pre-draft workouts. Like, I think they have to release when guys are working out. Like Wizards PR will release on Twitter, these guys came in for a workout, these guys came in for a workout. But I think if there's individual workouts, like one-on-ones and not group sessions, then they don't need to release it because Bilal worked out for the Wizards last year. It was his only workout before the draft, and they didn't say anything about it. So I don't really know what that's like, but I would assume these next 3 weeks is going to be heavy pre-draft workouts, pre-draft interviews, stuff like that, and kind of getting to see what prospects they're looking at for maybe 26 and 51, because you know it's probably between the same guys for two. And that's kind of what I would talk about right now. Like I put out a tweet about this yesterday. If you look at a lot of the main sites and their mock drafts, their most recent ones, Bleacher Report, ESPN, The Ringer, Yahoo, and NBA DraftNet, five of the prominent websites for the draft all have Zachariah Risacher going one and the Wizards getting Alex Saar at number two. And I've talked about this for the whole draft process, but for me, this would be a home run because Saar's been the top guy on my big board. I feel like he's the top guy on a lot of people's big boards, but it's just weird because the Hawks are in a weird spot. They have two centers right now. They have Clint Capella making what, 20 plus million a year. They have Onyeka Okongwu, who I'm pretty sure they just extended, and he's making decent money. And those are two guys that I don't think anybody realistically would trade for in the offseason. Nobody wants Clint Capella on that contract because he's not worth it. He's a drop big. Nobody, he can't shoot. Like, why would I pay not only him $20 million, but pay assets to get him? And same thing for Okongwu. Like, he's a rim running big and he's more athletic. He's kind of like a poor man's Gafford. But again, I don't really want to trade assets for him. And the Hawks have to pay both of them. And if you're trying to win now, are you really going to draft another center when you have needs at other spots like the wing? It's kind of a combination. Like, I feel like I'm talking myself into Sarr falling and the Hawks taking Risache because I want that's the scenario I want to happen. But I feel like it makes sense as well for a team like the Hawks that is kind of in win now mode for the time being. And like they've underachieved, of course, but why would like another center does you no good? It doesn't. And I feel like they're a team that's going to draft for fit over need. They clearly have a front office issue because they've made some terrible moves. I mean, you traded all that for Deontay Murray to come in and play point guard when you had a franchise point guard. Why would you think that two on-ball dominant players could coexist in the same backcourt? There's a reason Trae Young plays better without Murray, and Murray plays better without Trae Young, and the Hawks' record is better when only one of them is healthy. Like, it doesn't work. It was a stupid move, and I think the Hawks' front office is inept. I think they got bailed out by getting the first pick. They didn't deserve to be in this spot. And if any team was going to mess this up and take Risache over Sarr, who I think is way worse than Sarr, I think it's Atlanta, and that's why I'm confident. I would give it a 65% chance that Alex Sarr is available at number two. I think I've said it again. Like it just makes sense for the Hawks to go with Risache. And if that's the case, then Washington has its choice of Stephon Castle and Sarr at two, and I don't even think it's any debate. The Wizards have a huge, huge gaping hole at center, and they also have it work out where the best player by a mile in that spot is a center. So I think, like I said, I give it a 65%+ chance that Alex Sarr is available at two. And that's just kind of my thoughts for from now. And that could all change after pre-draft workouts and certain, reports and stuff. But as of June 6th, I'm staying on that course that I think Alex Sarr will fall to two and he'll be a Wizard in 20 days. And as much as I'd like to talk about the other picks, 26, 51, the draft is so weird where I can't. Obviously, I can give you prospects that I like in that range, but those guys could also go in the lottery or, might not be there at that time. It's a little more difficult to talk about those picks versus the other picks. So, gonna just kind of stay on this course where I think Sarr falls to two. And that's kind of all I got for the draft stuff. I mean, you saw Topic with a partially torn ACL. That's huge news. I think he was targeted in that 5 to 7 range, 4 to 7 maybe. And I don't think there's any way he gets drafted in that range. And look, if a guy like Topic falls to like Memphis at 9, and Memphis is sitting there saying, look, give me Kyle Kuzma, and you can trade back in to get the 9th pick after he falls, and you can take Topic at 9 for a guy that I think is easily a top 5 prospect, you got to discuss it, especially if he's fallen to like 13 and you got a team there like Sacramento that says, we want Kyle Kuzma. We'll give you the 13th pick and like a future one. And they'll give us like Harrison Barnes to make the money work, but we want Kyle Kuzma. That's a no-brainer. A no-brainer. And do I think Kyle is going to get traded based on, some from people that I've talked to within the Wizards org and other Wizards Twitter personalities? It's kind of split. I could see him getting moved. I really think the Wizards will be smart to at least explore those trades, like I talked about in my episode a couple weeks back. I don't see them pulling the trigger right now. As much as some people might want to see him get traded, and with a lot of lottery teams looking to trade out for win now pieces, this is probably the time to do it. But I just think the Wizards are going to hold out because they know at the deadline, teams are a little bit more desperate than they are in the offseason at the draft, and they could probably extract more value, especially with a better draft class next year, for Kuz than what they currently get. But that's going to do it for this episode. Again, talked about Brian Keith's introductory press conference. I thought he was very well spoken. Will Dawkins spoke glowingly about him, not only as a coach, but as a human being. And that's kind of something I enjoyed hearing. You have this player coach dynamic, but you got to make sure it's a player coach and not a player friend dynamic. where you kind of get walked all over, and I hope that's not the case. Again, talked about some of the improvements. Denny Avdia, Corey Kispert averaging five more, pretty much 5 points per game more under Brian Keith than with Wes. Full way better on ball, more assists, more points per game. A lot of really solid improvements on both ends of the floor under Brian Keith. And look, although this might be looked upon as the safe hire or the typical Wizards hire, I think it's the right hire. And that's the sentiment that I'm trying to stress here. I think they made the right hire, whether or not he's a bridge coach or whether or not he's a Mark Dagnall that takes him through the rebuild. I think they made the right move here. And then that's where I'm going to leave it at. Again, I appreciate all you guys for tuning in, for letting me know certain things you want me to talk about. Again, if you ever send me a direct message, you know I respond right away to everyone. So feel free if you got anything you want me to talk about, any pod topics, any guests you want me to have on, or just Wizards questions, shoot me a DM on Twitter. They're open. I'll always respond. And again, I appreciate all you guys for tuning in. It's going to do it for this episode. Go Wiz.